Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
10 after 10. Thank you, Domati. This is John Williams. You're listening to WGN Radio. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Thank you, Mr. Fix-It, Lindsay and Lou Manfredini, putting on another terrific show today and ending with some advice that we take our Mincing Rascals podcast, portions of which will be broadcast at this time in the next hour. 11:10, we play part of the roundtable back. And I'm a fan like Lou of the gang. They're really fair, they're really spirited, they're really fun, really smart, and have differing opinions. They talk about everything from Donald Trump to the soda tax, the sweetened beverage tax in Cook County, which goes into effect July 1st. And a lot of what you'll hear an hour from now is them debating the wisdom or the folly of that beverage tax that we've got, an increase in the state income tax coming up, and is it art or crap, the Lincoln statue that is just behind my back here. We're in this Showcase studio and in this Equitable Plaza, the Tribune Plaza, the courtyard that includes the Walk of Fame with names like Judy Pilak. So there's this giant statue out behind me, and it's of Abraham Lincoln, and he's showing the way, if you will. His arm gestured forward to a Matthew Broderick-like character. I don't know how else to describe him. Did you know what that is in his hand, Griffin? Because we've talked about this before. That's the Emancipation Proclamation, and he's showing this sort of white suburban dad from the 90s something about the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, you saw him as – you said he looked like Matthew Broderick to you. I think he looks like a young Bobby Knight.
Never thought about it that way. Now I won't be able to not think about it that way.
That's definitely how he's dressed.
He is. He's got the dorkiest, dweebiest, oh, God, Dad, please don't wear those clothes with me at the mall outfit on. And it's such a – It's like Abe Lincoln looks more intelligently or currently dressed than this guy.
I mean, you could Abe Lincoln is sort of gesturing his hand outward toward the Michigan Avenue as if to say, go, there are shops for you. There are new clothes.
I know. This is my proclamation. Go forth and shop. Buy a $3 coffee at Starbucks, young man. It's just, you know, everything to me, I don't know a lot about art, but you don't have to, right? You're a consumer, and so I am the object of the artist's work, and I just don't get it. It's annoying to me, and I walk by it every single day.
It has taken the place of what a few years ago was the Marilyn Monroe statue, which was, you know, disliked by some for a different reason entirely, but
yeah, right.
I'm not sure that this is a step up. I don't know.
Right.
I hate to be so critical. Well, I don't get it, though. I don't like it.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, and so this is the thing. How can you not like a statue of Abraham Lincoln talking to modern man? I mean, I get in concept. You go, hey, John, let's go. We're going to do this. I go, how could you fail? Yeah, give it a go. It didn't work. So the Mincing Rascals will be talking about that. In fact, you know, one of the things we pose at the very, very end of the podcast, I hate to pre-sell it this much, but I'll just put this in your ear. You could call me if you like, 312-981-7200. What Chicago or Illinois-centric thing should we have a statue of? We've got a Michael Jordan statue where he slam dunking the ball in front of the United Center. You might think of other iconic Illinoisans or Chicagoans and say, well, there should be a statue of Abe Lincoln, you know, doing something like this. That makes sense. We've had American Gothic and Marilyn Monroe, not necessarily Illinois, but okay, whatever. I proposed that they take that famous photograph of the gang celebrating after the World Series win last year, you know, of them all doing the human pile of love and happiness in the infield after the Cubs won the World Series, and turn that into a statue. Put that over there. If you said, okay, well, you should have one of the mayor's daily, or, you know, I don't know who the Illinois politicians are that we want to, you know, immortalize. Maybe Paul Simon, the great downstate politician and U.S. senator, who finally quit being a United States senator, not because he didn't want to govern, but because he didn't want to raise the money anymore. Understood, Paul. So who else should we immortalize in a statue like that?
And one point I just want to make clear, because this other, it's so weird, another Abraham Lincoln statue in Chicago made headlines this past week. the one in Edgewater in Sen Park.
Yeah, right.
With the young Abe Lincoln.
It's a bronze statue. It's about 15 feet tall, and that's got it going on.
The sexy Abe Lincoln is what people are saying.
Totally. Abe Lincoln / Bachelor in Paradise.
nothing wrong with that one. But
No.
Just to be clear, we're talking about the one in the Daily Plaza.
Not in Daily Plaza.
Oh, sorry. No, yeah.
Tribune Plaza. Tribune Plaza. The Equitable building behind us.
Right.
It's 10:15. Here's another famous face and name that's made news this week, George Clooney. This is such an interesting story to me, and I'll just talk about it briefly to make another larger point. So there's George Clooney, who's famous and rich enough, right? I mean, there's not much about George Clooney you don't want to be or be next to. And one of his buddies is a guy named Rand Gerber. Gerber's married to Cindy Crawford. Clooney and Mr. Crawford like to hang out and drink tequila at night. And you know how they are. They go, we can make a better tequila than this. And so while they're doing their research, they're sampling tequila. And then lo and behold, they start making their own tequila. And they go, wow, this is pretty good tequila. And then they start to make more of the tequila for their friends. And then they start to sell some of it. And they started to make enough of it that they realized we need a commercial license if we're going to make any more. So they go to another guy named Mike Meldman. And they say, Mike, could you give us some money? And we'll make even more. He says, okay. And in 2014, they start selling their brand of tequila. They just sold that company for $1 billion. $700 million in cash, $300 million in incentives if it hits projected sales. George Clooney is one-third of the group that just sold their tequila company for $1 billion.
You know, it's nice to see him finally catch a break.
Went home to his wife, who's awesome, in their awesome homes, and said, hey, honey, I just got awesomer. Sometimes awesome is wasted on people. What is he going to do with $1 billion? Or maybe $300 million. Give it to Boris Becker. Boris Becker is the other athlete that made news this week, or famous and presumably wealthy person. Boris Becker earned in his career maybe $120 million. He was a tennis great, and those of us that have loved tennis over the years sure remember this sort of steely gaze, the precision and the power of Boris Becker. Dang, he was good. Three times he wins Wimbledon. Declared bankruptcy. No. His lawyer said that he's not a sophisticated individual when it comes to finances. He had to sell his Mallorca home for $6.7 million and other stuff. He said, listen, if you just give me till Tuesday, I'll get it all together. And they said, no, you are now declared bankrupt and all the consequences that follow. You cannot dodge this any longer. Six-time Grand Slam champion. And when you think about that, then you think of other athletes who have similarly gone down the road of ruin. Bjorn Borg, the tennis great, also declared bankruptcy. Didn't know that. Hadn't thought about Bjorn in a while, have you? But when you do think about this, you think of the granddaddy of them all, and who is that? Panionovich Sports. Hello. Greatest financial collapse, most money wasted by an athlete all time is?
Mike Tyson.
Ding, ding, ding. Reportedly earned $400 million. You know, he was a world champion at the age of 20. He wasn't that well educated, and anybody at the age of 20 earning hundreds of millions of dollars just isn't in a position to handle it, especially when you're getting the kind of advice that he was getting. But he had, here were some of his expenses, $230,000 a month on cell phones and pagers. I'm going to say that again, because small nations don't have phone bills like this. $230,000 a month on cell phones and pagers. Boy, what a waste of money that seems to be now. Pagers from 1995 to 1997. So for 24 months, he spent $250,000 a month on his devices and charges. He spent $400,000 on a single birthday party. He spent thousands of dollars caring for tigers that were roaming his Las Vegas mansion. He owes $13 million to the IRS at one point, $9 million he owed on a divorce settlement. He finally declared bankruptcy in 2003, claiming debts of $27 million. $27 million. So when you think boxing, you also think, though, of Evander Holyfield. Holyfield's the guy whose ear Tyson bit off in that famous boxing match of theirs, and Holyfield had problems of himself. The bite fight, as it's now known, I didn't know it was called that, but why not? In 1997.
That writer says, the bite fight, as it's now known to me.
Yes, I know.
As I've decided it's called.
I know, because I think if I said the bite fight, maybe you'd get it, but I don't think that's part of the vernacular. Bite fight of 1997, during which a frustrated Tyson bit off a chunk of Holyfield's ear and spit it into the stands. Maybe he was frustrated because he had 11 children with 9 different women. Holyfield was paid $34 million for the bite fight, and he earned in his career $560 million. He had 6 heavyweight titles. All of the child support added up fast. Presumably, so did the electric bill on his 54,000-square-foot mansion in Atlanta with 109 rooms and 17 bathrooms. 17 bathrooms. 17 bathrooms. 3 kitchens and a bowling alley. Crippled by debt and unable to make mortgage payments, Holyfield was evicted from his home and forced to auction off his boxing memorabilia. He had to sell his gloves, his boots, and his robe from the bite fight. This writer must love that phrase, Griffin. He's woven it into a short story 3 times. There's a couple of others as well. But it leads me to a financial quandary I ran into, too. And let me just pose this to you guys, and then I'll take a break. You can give me your answer in a second. I had to open up a new account at a new bank today. We've moved to the Chicago area. I found a bank that's nearby. As I was going over the checking options and fees, the guy said, okay, the program you've signed up for is one of our finer checking programs. You should know the following. If you use your debit card and you have insufficient funds on the account, you have one of 2 options. We can cover that for you and charge you a fee, or at the point of purchase, the transaction can be denied. Which would you go with? Which would you go with? I want you to cover it and I'll pay the fee, save me the embarrassment, and I still get that cool thing at Target. Or deny the purchase because I don't have the money. Which would you choose? Wait till you hear what the fee is. So which are you, Sam? Domati, Griff, would you say, I don't want to make the purchase if I don't have sufficient funds, or I want you to cover me and just charge me the nick?
I say block the purchase.
Block the purchase.
Block the purchase. That's what I always opt for. If I don't have it, I don't have it.
You don't have it?
Yeah.
How about you, G-Man?
I'd take option C, which is selling my tequila company for $1 billion. Could I do that?
Yeah.
Can I do that instead? Right. No, I guess I'd say block the purchase, but if it's an emergency...
Right.
Yeah. Like, then you're in trouble.
I've got to have that T-shirt. The charge, and I have good credit, is $34 per transaction. $34 per transaction. I thought, well, that's a fine welcome to the new bank. $34 per transaction. So.
And then I'm sure, John, there's a charge for how long your account stays deficient, right?
Oh, yeah, right, maybe so. Well, he did say, that's $34 per transaction. So suppose they scan something, beep, and you don't have the funds, $34. The next item on the scanner, beep, another $34.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Not per day, it's per transaction.
Well, it would be kind of wild. Well, yeah, I guess if you don't know. But if you knew you had insufficient funds and you're making multiple
I know.
Purchases.
There's maybe a point where you just don't care. Screw it. I don't care. I'll worry about this tomorrow. I really want to go to the beach. And I want I want that 12-pack of beer, and I want the umbrella, and I want the suntan lotion. Beep, beep, beep. Uptick, $92 or whatever it is.
Wow.
And
it's
a
hefty price.
I don't know what people – and the thing that bothers me about that, Domati, is that I don't deny them their costs. You know, like if you're providing a service, I have to pay for it. I'm not sure, though, that they really incurred a $34 expense when that thing went boop. And then again, boop.
Right.
I don't know that that cost them $34 more to fix that or to cover that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a profit mechanism.
Well, that's what it feels like to me. I'm thinking, well, you know, why 34? I would charge 62. I mean, what the hell? If you're going to make some money on me, go ahead and run the register. If you've got 34, you've got 62. It's all insane.
Well, and I'm sure everyone's gone down this line of thought before, but it's like, hey, you know, I don't. Have it. You can't charge me for not having money.
That's kind of ironic, isn't it, Mr. Banker?
It costs so much to be broke.
Joke's on you. Mm. I don't have it.
Exactly.
Sucker.
And my big, not only that transaction, but however many days it stays there, tacking it on.
So tell me what your experience is along these lines, and have you ever run into something like this? My number is 312-981-7200. This is John. It's 1029. Domitee's got the news for you. That's next on WGN. 1037. Domitee, thank you for that. This is John Williams. In the next half hour, our broadcast of the podcast, we call it The Mincing Rascals. The gang takes a look not only at the Lincoln statue downtown, but the penny per ounce beverage tax. It's actually a sweetened beverage tax that Cook County is going to implement at the first of the month. It's really remarkable, I think, so that for a 99-cent 2-liter bottle of soda, you get that, you say, okay, that's the sale price. That looks pretty good. That's the sale price, right, isn't it? 99 cents for 2 liters. That will now go to $1.63 because it'll be a penny per ounce, and 2 liters equals 64 ounces. This will teach us math, if nothing else. I think it'll teach us to stop drinking 2-liter bottles of soda. So the gang kicks her. And by the way, I was surprised because there was quite a few differing opinions about the wisdom of that. Some thought it was a good, fair, reasonable idea. And others thought that it's a sign of the apocalypse. It's coming your way in the next half hour. I was just moaning about the fact that my new swell bank, and they seem to be swell, and I guess it's on me if I overdraft, but if I use my debit card at a point of purchase. And you know, Domitee, I was thinking, there are times where you say, okay, when you set up the account, they say, we can deny any purchase if you don't have sufficient funds. That way you won't overspend and you won't get hit with a fee. And you say, okay, that's probably the logical way to go. But what if you're at a gas station and you have to or want to get gas? And then you say, oh, crap, now I got to pay the fee, but I have to get gas.
Right.
Or what if you're at some other place where you're at the drugstore and you have to get Band-Aids or medicine or whatever it is? I could probably think of other scenarios where you say, this is terrible, but not making the purchase is even going to be more problematic for me.
Well, you can switch over to the credit card, unless, we're assuming that folks have that. But, yeah, you know. That's true.
Switch over to a credit card.
Yeah, using the debit card as a credit card is never the advantageous option there.
It's just amazing to me that the fee then for they say, okay, we'll throw the switch. We'll cover you, John. You're good. $34 per transaction.
Per transaction.
I'm thinking you guys are hoping that I have $34 per transaction because I'll bet your cost per transaction is about a penny.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the rest is just teaching me a lesson. That's what that is.
I love when those fees are such odd numbers, though.
All right. I know that it almost makes it sound like, well, Lois over here makes $19 an hour.
Exactly.
And then she's got vacation pay and she needs a new car. And it comes to that's your share, John, $34. You don't want Lois to have a car?
Yeah, it's so exact. It has to be
something specific.
But no, and it makes the math more difficult as you try to figure out how deeper into poverty you're going.
Yeah, like I can multiply 34 by anything. No. Joe, what did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this was years ago. I lived in a town of, I guess you'd call it lower middle class, and right next to the town was an upper middle class town. And I don't want to mention names. It was Forest Park and River Forest. But anyway, River Forest Bank. Now, I never, ever had a problem with checks or negative balances or anything. If I didn't have the money, I didn't spend it. But I got a mailer, which made me so mad that I called them up and I said, you're insulting people. But it said, for new customers, the first 5 NSF checks you write are free.
Really? Because we know you're going to have some. Yeah. And you know you're going to have some.
Because you live in Forest Park.
Let's cut to the chase. We know you're going to write some bad checks. We got the first 5. Wow.
Yeah, we got the first 5. No fees. And I said, you're insulting.
And
people.
Doesn't that almost encourage you? So it just says, don't worry about insufficient funds.
No, it didn't encourage me to write an NSF check.
I think that's what that's saying. That's saying, really, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. And then the 6th and 7th come along. I've never seen that.
Yeah, well, this was years ago. I called and really complained and said that it was insulting to people, you know.
How about that? Joe, thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
I haven't seen that. I've never seen that. Hey, Catherine, this is John. You're on the air. What did you want to say?
Are you talking to Catherine?
I sure am. Hi, Catherine. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Welcome back. My bank that I go to, they have a thing they offer the customers, because I have a CD and a savings account there, and there's a good amount of money in there because I put it in every month. And if it ever happened, my check was overdrawn, check account.
Pull it from the other funds.
They would just pull it out of one of my, I forget which one. I think money market or one of the other savings accounts.
Yeah.
For no charge.
Yeah, and you know, thank you for the phone call. I suppose that's an option that's available to most people. But literally, as I was going through this, I know that sort of came up, but they said, but you have to have a baseline amount in your accounts in order for that to happen. So for you to have this free transfer of funds, you have to have $15,000 or so many thousand dollars in your accounts at all time. And here again, I think that's problematic because the people who might have this problem to begin with might not also have $15,000 always in savings just in case they need to cover that. Sure, that's logical, though. I appreciate your call, and yeah, I get that. Lori, you're on the air. You're on WGN. Hi, Lori.
I was in finance for over 30 years. I worked for a credit union and a savings and loan over the years. Anyway, part of the problem is especially with the debit cards, people apparently don't keep a register. And they keep all this.
What's a register?
Seriously, a register. Oh, my gosh. I'm dating myself. But that's what you're supposed to do. You add in your deposits. You withdraw your transactions.
Here's how you find out how much money you have in your account. You go.
What you have. Don't go by what the bank has because, of course, they don't know what is cleared.
Hold on a second. I want to ask Domati a question. Hey, Domati, Sam's a young man, too. Have either of you ever kept a checkbook with a register? Have you ever done math subtracting from your balance the checks that you were writing, a paper record of your checking account? Have either of you ever had that?
We're millennials. I can't even find paper and pen half the time.
Panayanovich, yes or no? Never? Never had that? No. No. Yeah, I think that's, and by the way, when a lot of us were relying on that, we weren't that good at it either. But I'm sorry, Lori, so you were saying?
Yeah, they keep a lot of this information. I would say you're always overdrawn. Let me see your register. Why don't keep a register? What do you do with it? I keep it in my head. Do you know how much stuff is floating around in that head?
Yeah, not enough sometimes. I get you, Lori. But you know, you do have an app. You can always go on your phone and see how much money you have there, or you can go make a modest withdrawal. You can actually go to an ATM and check your balances that way. But it's just a sign of the times. People don't have check registers anymore.
I'll tell you what, John, I'm so scared about something, some type of fraud happening on my account. So I get a text message anytime more than $100 is spent. So even when I make a $100 purchase, I get a text, lets me know that purchase has been made, and then it gives me the balance.
I think that's good for both reasons, isn't it?
Yeah,
You sort of keep your balance in front of you once in a while. That's an interesting feature. I haven't done that. Anytime anybody makes a $100 purchase or more, I suppose you can set the threshold.
Yeah, you can set the threshold.
It could be $20. It could be $150. Whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it kind of works that way. It's somewhat of a leisure.
Hey, Steve, you're on WGN. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
Hey, good, Steve. What's on your mind? You're on the air.
Okay, so the state of Illinois, in their political grandeur, decided that because I had not logged in and looked at the amount of money that I had in my stock account or whatever it is, they considered it abandoned and withdrew the money from my stock account. And now, A, it's not collecting any money, and there was a recent rise in that particular stock. I mean, significant, over $1,200, $1,300 that I've lost. Also, they said, oh, well, you can reapply for it and get your money back. Okay, does it go back into my stock account? Oh, no. We just give it back to you minus the taxes and everything else. Oh, so, and then also on top of that, they're not paying out any money right now.
I'm confused because if that's your money, what does Illinois have to do with it? Did you have it like in a Schwab account?
No, it was with E-Trade, if we want to name it. Don't want to name names. It was with E-Trade. So they said because the account is considered, could be considered abandoned because I hadn't logged in online. They said, well, why on earth would I need to log in online? I can look at any
stock ticker, let alone an app.
But so you have an E-Trade. You're doing business with E-Trade, and the state of Illinois somehow monitors that. And if it's not active often enough,
here's what they do: they call into E-Trade, call in, write in, however they can contact E-Trade, and they say, give us a list of all of your inactive accounts that haven't been touched, monitored, looked at, whatever, however they, whatever wording they choose.
Sure.
And say, okay, anything over this amount of time, we're withdrawing, or it's considered abandoned, and they pay it out.
You can reclaim that. Let me ask you this. How long, boy, I'm having trouble believing this, but I know you didn't call to tell me a lie. This is just bizarre. But okay, so how long was the account not active? How many months had gone by before this happened?
I haven't touched it since it was stock that was paid to, or was, I was paid partially in stock dividends from the company that I worked for. And it would been
how long ago?
Years. It's been years.
So years. So, and you didn't even... You know, if I had money in an account, I think I'd be clicking on at least looking at it once in a while. You didn't even pay any attention to it.
No. It's not that I didn't pay attention to it. I knew exactly how many shares I had, and I don't need to log into the account to determine how much I have. I can look at any stock ticker, do the math, and voila.
Boy, when I get to be king, this doesn't happen. Okay, so then when you go to, at least there's a mechanism for you to reclaim it, although I can't believe they confiscated it. But then you lost the interest from the time they pulled it out to what the appreciation would have been of those stocks, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And do they do the math on that and go, well, when we confiscated it, it was worth X, now it's worth Y, so we'll reimburse you the difference?
No.
I knew the answer to that question. I just had to ask. Steve, when I get to be king, that will not happen. Yeah, well, that's all I got. Thank you for the phone call. Yeah, we got to take a break here. Griff, you were going to review a list of movies for us this week, too. Maybe we'll get to that. We still got our Mincing Rascals coming around after 11 o'clock. Steve, thanks for the call, and maybe just one more here, and that's Stephen on 4. Hey, Stephen, you're on the air. You're on WGN.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
You guys shouldn't be make light of this register thing with the banks and your checking. If you're too lazy, get the carbon checks, okay?
Yeah.
So you have a paper trail. That's
right.
One. Two,
yeah.
I'll give you a real live example. In March of this year, I wrote a check for $1,105, and it was like the 27th of February. They deducted it from my account on that statement, and the following statement I had it deducted again. Had I not had a paper statement or some register,
right,
I would have never have known it. I would have never have known it.
You mean they deducted the money from your account twice?
Yes.
Boy, if my bank is doing that to me, it's completely lost on me. Maybe Brenda's paying closer attention, but I'm not.
Well, I'm sure it doesn't happen frequently, but the fact of the matter is that everybody makes mistakes. And it's not such a bad idea. What's the big deal? You know, I could see if you don't want to write it down each time you write a check. So get carbon checks.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is people don't write checks that often anyway. Mostly people are doing their banking online and direct transfers of money. And here again, though, you hope that the math on that or the software or there's no glitches. If humans are touching it, you hope they're doing it right. Because I got to tell you, I think most folks just take that sort of thing for granted, Stephen.
Yeah, yes, they do. I agree. And I wouldn't encourage that at all.
Yeah, I get you, man. Thanks for the call. It's 10:50. This is WGN. By the way, Steve Bertrand has called in. Hey, Steve, it's John. What's going on, man?
Hey, John Williams, how are you?
I'm good. Why, thank you for listening. I'm flattered.
I never miss. The caller about the money that was taken.
Yeah, and his accounts,
yeah,
his E-Trade
on
thing.
The business lunch. Right. So, you know, when you'll hear State Treasurer Mike Frericks advertise that you might have money that they're holding, you know, and you go to the treasurer's office, you look for your name and all of that.
Right.
You know, well, this is where it comes from. So there are, I don't understand it completely, but there are restrictions so that if an account is considered dormant for so long, rather than allow banks or other companies to sit on and hold that money, it's turned over to the state where people can claim it. So it's kind of a hinky thing, but it actually was set up in a way to protect people. Terry Savage actually talks about this, about how you should go online and log on to your account every year or so at least to make sure it's not ever considered dormant.
My three siblings and I did that once, and two of us, as I recall, had money in some account. And I always thought that I always thought that was like when people move or there's a death in the family and everything isn't reconciled. And I understand that. But if I just have an account and I'm not doing anything with it, I had no idea that the state would consider that dormant and confiscate the funds inside there.
Well, if you think of it, they think that you've moved or died or whatever because you never check your account.
Well, it's none of their business what I'm doing or not doing. I'm fine.
I know, but if there's got to be a way to turn dead people's money or abandoned money over somehow,
yeah,
and they're not checking to see if they're dead, they're just looking at the account to see if it's been untouched for a period of years or so.
Well, you know what they should do. You know how when you are sometimes signing up for things or doing some function online and you have to check the I'm not a robot box? Maybe
right.
There should be
I'm
not dead box. You just go, trust me, I'm good. I'm alive. Thank you for the heads up, but we're good here. And then they'd say, okay, then we won't take your money.
Okay, but think of it another way. If you've got an old aunt who's got these accounts all over the place and she passes away and you don't know where her accounts are.
No.
You would never find it, and this is a mechanism to sort of return it. I mean, like I said, I'm not defending it. It's kind of weird in some ways, but I think that's what he was talking about. That's why that's set up.
Hmm. Well, I just declared to the previous caller, Steve, that when I get to be king, this will no longer be in place, but maybe I should rethink that edict, eh?
Yeah, either that or come up with another way to find, you know. I mean, I did too. I moved and left a bank in my neighborhood, and I got like $20 or $25 or something that I had kind of just left in the account. But that's why that is there.
It's a real moment of truth, too, when you go, we've got $11.63 or $122 somewhere, and now you've got to do a form and an online piece of paperwork, and it's kind of a hassle, and maybe then your password
right.
doesn't match, and you're wasting time. And we've all been down that rabbit hole, and you go, screw it. But you don't want to do that because that's your money in principle and in fact.
Exactly.
Yeah. By the way, you are featured heavily in the next half hour of this fine radio broadcast, so I'm going to hang up on you now.
Good reason to turn off the radio.
No. Keep listening. Thank you, Steve. Steve Bertrand, you hear him during the noontime business lunch on WGN Radio and, of course, doing the news. I get a chance to chat with him weekdays from 1 to 3 here on WGN. Domati's got your news coming up. Thank you, Domati. It's 11:08. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Lovely day downtown. In just a moment, our Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. You can hear it in its entirety wherever you subscribe to find our podcast, The Mincing Rascals, a roundtable of WGN and Tribune friends talking about stories in the news. Before I get to that, though, I just want to mention one thing that Griffin has pointed out to me. We were talking about checking accounts, balances, and overdraft charges a little while ago, to which Griffin said, the greatest tweet about this subject of all time is this, and he sent it to me. And I just want to read the tweet to you and then a couple of the comments that fell underneath. This goes back to 2013, and it's been liked 80,000 times. This has Trump-like traffic on it since it's been posted for a few years. It's a guy named Wint, W-I-N-T, and he posted this. Food, $200. Data, $150. Rent, $800. Candles, $3,600. Utility, $150. Someone who is good at the economy, please help me budget this. My family is dying. The first response is from Craig, who said, spend less on candles. The second response is Wint, who says, no. The next response is Craig, who said, well, then you're an idiot and your family will die due to your candle fetish. Someone named Pyler then responds, spend less on candles, idiot. Your family should be more important. Wint then replied, this post is 2 years old. I've since lost custody of my children and my wife left me, still wild about candles. Pyler then responds, sounds like a personal problem. You posted this, so I commented to help you out. And then somebody named Datlove said, hey, leave him alone. You've done enough damage. To which Pyler said, how did I do damage? And then Datlove said, can you just chill about the candles, please? This man has lost everything. And Pyler said he lost everything because of his own fetish about candles, not because of me. To which Datlove said, he can't buy candles anymore. Does that make you happy? Watching this back and forth, a person named Ritz just chimed in, spend less on food. And that's the way Americans talk on the internet.
But to be, I don't want to ruin.
Go ahead. I don't care. It's good even as it is.
You said he's Wint, and W-I-N-T. That's true. That's his display name. His at is at Drill, D-R-I-L. People usually refer to him as Drill, and he's one of the funniest Twitters in the world. No one knows his identity.
Oh, no kidding, really?
But he's got a million amazing tweets. He's very funny.
He doesn't have a check mark here. He's just some dude lobbing it out there.
He's got a ton of followers and consistently hilarious.
He just picked up one more follower, I'll tell you that.
At Drill.
At D-R-I-L.
Yeah.
11-11, this is WGN. John Williams here. Okay, so the Menzing Rascals talk about a bunch of things. And just to set up this week's podcast broadcast, Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, and editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stanison, I sat down on Thursday. We were talking about the fact that on July 1st, Cook County will have a new 1 cent per ounce sweet beverage tax, which means that your 64 ounces of a 2-liter bottle of soda will now go up 64 cents. A 12-pack goes up $1.44, something like that. And Eric Zorn pointed out that if you get a large soda with ice in it, at a fast food place, they'll charge you for the total volume of the cup, even though a lot of that is ice. You're actually being taxed on ice. Okay, we pick it up there here on WGN.
If you add ice, if you go into the thing, ice, you know, you're not getting 20 ounces of sweetened beverage. Yeah. You're getting maybe 15 or something like that, but you're still paying the 20 cents because the tax is going to apply.
So is there
ice
can we cap and trade then? Can we apply that extra tax we paid to our next drink or something?
Good question, Steve. Good question.
Thank you.
The local retailers will do the accounting on that, by the way, because SNAP recipients will not have to pay this. At least that's the current interpretation of it. So
at grocery stores,
Grocery stores, right. But, I mean, so if I come through, I have to pay $1.63. If you come through with your SNAP card, you don't. And it's up to the local retailer to figure out who pays what, how, when, where.
Well, it's not hard for them to figure out who pays the tax. The retailer under the current system has already paid the tax. So he needs to get a refund from the distributor, who then needs to get a refund from the county.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, and that's not complicated at all.
It's a very difficult situation. And then we've got to keep track of, okay, I bought Gatorade from this distributor, and I bought Red Bull from this distributor, and I bought my vitamin water from this distributor, and I'm going to have to get refunds from all of them. It's an incredible nightmare.
This was brought up in a meeting we had earlier, Eric and I. And can this be rescinded? Because this is a bunch of garbage. I mean, this is nanny state gone nuts. This is a greedy money grab. I mean, it's everything that's bad about Cook County politics.
Scott, in the words of Toni Preckwinkle, and I read Eric Zorn's column to her in part the other day, the Cook County Board president.
She likes that, I'm sure.
Good. I know. I thought, oh, this is obnoxious, but it was succinct.
Not the column, his reading it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's soothing tones, and then she's breathing heavily. She's
good asleep. Government costs money. If you want good government, you have to be willing to pay for it. This is a way to pay for it.
Well, okay, I'm still waiting for good government.
Well, you know, I mean, I haven't looked under the hood of Cook County finances, but Preckwinkle has cut costs, and when she was in talking to the editorial board about this, she was saying that this is money that we need for health care and public safety and you know, things like, you know, public defender's office and so on, and they feel like they have cut as far as they can cut, and they need this revenue. Now, you know, I'm not going to referee that here. The idea that this is a nanny state thing, yeah, I mean, it's a sin tax, basically. They've decided that sugary beverages, which is really most of these laws, like Mexico has one, Berkeley has one, go after sugary beverages. Philadelphia has one that's a sweetened beverage thing, and that so you don't discriminate between Diet Coke and regular Coke, which is probably its own nightmare. But I think the question you asked was, can they rescind this? And they can. They can either rescind it or they can delay it. I think it needs to be delayed until they can get some of these bugs out of it in terms of implementation.
If you guys saw 99 cents for a bottle of Diet Coke on the shelf, and then the next day it's $1.63, do you still pick up the 2-liter bottle of soda?
Oh, don't forget, they tried to hide that. This is one of the things about this bill, is they tried to put it on the shelf instead of put it on your receipt so you can say, it says, you just paid X amount of dollars for the tax.
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that in general has been that there's a significant reduction in the number of people at stores where they have these stacks and buying them. I mean, like 40%, I think, was what they've seen in Philadelphia.
It's amazing.
Also, so, I mean, and people may either be buying more Twinkies and Ho-Hos, or they may be doing their beverage shopping across the border.
Or, she says, Toni Preckwinkle says, you're going to buy milk, you're going to buy water, you're going to buy less expensive beverages that aren't affected by the tax. you'll shift your consumption.
What's disingenuous about this, in my mind, about Toni Preckwinkle, is if you recall when she first ran for her first term as county president, she ran against Todd Stroger and ran against the Stroger tax, which, by the way, she reasonably cut back. Over the time, her term in office, she has brought it back.
Okay, so do you support the tax, Steve Bertrand?
I don't have a problem with the nanniness of it. You know, I think,
or the amount
I think,
of it.
I think if we're gonna raise taxes, why not raise taxes in a way that might have a positive health impact as well? So I'm not that up in arms about it. Although my Diet Coke has gone up quite a bit.
It will go up.
It already has it here. I think
You think they're already implementing the tax here?
God, I hope so. I hope they're not going to add a tax to what they're charging now.
What are you talking about, Steve? It's going to go up
in the vending machine.
There's a new vending machine down here, and it's $2.15, I think.
For what? For a big
20 ounce?
Are you kidding? It's $2.15.
Right,
think
six.
About that. And if that's 20 ounces, it's going to go to $2.35.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. They might have already put it
in.
Maybe not.
This is diet, and the taxes are going to go up on this.
Yes,
it's sweetened beverages.
Oh, good Lord!
Right. So actually,
frankly, and you know what? I drink too many Diet Cokes. I
that
drink a couple
of
days.
That is not Preckwinkle's job to fix.
Yeah.
The idea that we're drinking too much sweets and that's too many calories and too much sugar. Okay, but if it's a diet
soda.
Well,
you're asking me what I think. And so would I rather pay an across-the-board increase that would focus on, you know, raise the same amount of money, or would I rather have to pay extra for this Diet Coke and think, you know what, I don't need another Diet Coke. I'm going to pass. Hey, good for me. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, and now you're not paying your share of the tax either.
If they find out that's true, then they'll tax non-sugary
drinks. There's also some job effects going on. These distributors and retailers and stuff, you know, may have to, I mean, because it's actually a phenomenal amount. Like 10% of grocery bills, in some studies I've read, are these sweetened beverages.
Yeah.
And so if that gets cut back, then revenues drop at these stores, revenues drop for these distributors and so on. I mean, I'm not opposed to the idea of I'm not opposed to like cigarette taxes or alcohol taxes. In general, I think this one is too steep. I think it's like it's going to shock people. I understand the rationale that says, well, we need the money, and also it helps, you know, maybe help us pay for some of the health care costs. It'll maybe diminish some of our health care costs because obesity, diabetes, and so on that are related to sweetened beverages.
I love how they trot those numbers out, though. If we do this, we'll save $173 million in health care costs over 10 years or something like that.
And I don't believe that.
How do you – who came up with that number? I'm sure there's a formula, and I'm sure it's a well-intended person, but I think that's kind of hocus-pocus. Speaking of numbers, this is the number that caught my eye in Monique Garcia and Kim Geiger's story in the Tribune today. No rest from bickering as lawmakers return to work. So we have a special session in Springfield, right? And it sounds like they're going back and forth on this budget bill. And here's the paragraph that catches my eye. It includes $5.4 billion in new money by increasing the personal income tax rate from 3.75% to just under 5%. And the corporate income tax rate will go from 5.25% to 7% in Illinois. Forget 99 cents on a bottle of soda or, you know, 64 cents. That's a significant increase in the state's income tax.
It's still lower than most of the taxes that are from states around us.
Oh, hooray.
I'm saying it's not like it's a shockingly high number, right? You know, and especially since it's a flat tax, which is its own problem. Flat income tax. A state like Wisconsin has a graduated tax. Iowa has a graduated tax. They go up to like 8% and 9%.
I think if you ask most Illinoisans, are they paying enough in taxes and are they getting their money's worth, they'd say yes and no. A percent, that's pretty high.
That riff would get you a gig on WIND, where this is what some of the hosts there are hammering on, the idea that we don't need any tax increase, that we can balance the budget without it. And that's just absolutely not the case.
I can quote the great governmental leader, Toni Preckwinkle, if good government costs money. And that go back to what Eric
really?
Wrote.
Really? So you guys
Eric wrote a couple weeks ago. Spending in state government in Illinois is actually pretty low when you compare it to other states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually quite low. And Illinois is not a high spending state. And also our overall tax burden per capita, when you talk about GDP, isn't noticeably high. What's happened is that for a long period of time, we've been spending more than we've been taking in. So we've got these enormous deficits. We've got this huge pile of bills we can't pay, this pension debt, which is just unimaginably high.
Yeah, so if you ignore all that, we're just Jake.
we're not even on the right path. I mean, you can get back on the right track and start to slope back up toward solvency. Right now, we're on the downward slope.
I just want to run this by you guys. There's a story that I'm not exactly sure why is running in DNA Info, because a statue was put up in 1997 in Edgewater, which depicts a sort of handsome Abraham Lincoln. Have you seen this one?
Wow.
It's a young one. His shirt's unbuttoned. He's looking off into the distance. He's got a book in his hand. It's a 13-foot tall bronze statue. It's the sexy Abe. He would be a candidate for the Bachelor or Bachelorette.
Yeah,
he looks awesome.
Dreamy Abe, yeah.
That compared to the Abraham Lincoln, which is in front of the Tribune Tower or adjacent to the Tribune Tower when I move back here.
Oh, God.
You've got Abraham Lincoln there. It looks like Abraham Lincoln. This one's about 50 feet tall, standing next to about a 40-foot tall Matthew Broderick character. I don't know who he's supposed to be, but it's a guy with a sweater with the collar underneath and the white sneakers.
And khakis, yeah.
Who is that guy? He's every man, right? And Abe's showing him the way.
I can say as an artist, you know, that the plaza has always been, since I've moved here, been a center, had some kind of public art. Usually the same guy, right? He did American Gothic, the painting from the
Institute. Monroe, yeah.
He did Marilyn Monroe, and everyone loved seeing the underwear. And now this. And the first two.
A lot of people got their pictures taken under the dress. Let's just put it that way.
It's supposed to be Abraham Lincoln handing someone from 1990, apparently. I'm not sure why 1990, but that's who it is, a copy of the Gettysburg Address.
Oh, is that what that is?
That's what it's supposed to be. That's how it was explained in the Chicago Tribune. The 90s guy, you're right, looks like flummoxed Matthew Broderick.
I've had so many people come up to me and say, I was at a client meeting the other day, and we're walking back with a client after having had a cup of soda, and they looked up and go, what is this? What is going on here?
One of my funniest moments ever in Chicago since I've lived here is they had, like I said, American Gothic. Tons of people were having their picture taken underneath the sculpture. My wife and I went to the Art Institute where the actual painting is by Grant Wood, and there's not a single person near the painting. Not a single person. It's like,
why don't you get your ace producer, Elif, to get the artist on the phone and explain himself or herself?
What the what?
I will do that. It seems to me like I'm a little late to this game or conversation, so maybe everybody's already sort of made their peace with it or not. I just wanted to run.
When you started describing the statue, I was thinking, no, that's Nathan Hale. I'd forgotten, you know,
Here's the statue they should do. Remember the now iconic photo of the Cubs celebrating, jumping into each other's arms, Rizzo in the air, or was it Bryant in the air and Rizzo holding him? That would make a great statue.
Yeah.
If they put that up there, there would be very long lines of people.
Cubs dogpiling on
the did Marilyn Monroe. We could do this.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that, Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, Scott Standis. The full podcast, including our discussion about what's been going on in Washington, D.C. this week, is all available when you download the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's 11:22. Or maybe just go for a little round of golf. I was thinking about posting Griffin on our Vibe Score segment on the app, the viral video of Donald Trump driving his golf cart across the green at his golf course, because it's just pretty awesome. And the guy that took the video was also golfing on the golf course, and he said, how about that? That's the only way you get away with it, if you own the golf course. So there's the president, who's not a young man and who really doesn't look that healthy these days. I think just the job and his diet and the stress are probably wearing on him. I don't know what to attribute it to, but he's 70 years old, he's overweight, and he owns the golf course. So if that's the case and you are finishing up on a green, you could walk across the green, or you could just drive your golf cart right across the green. And that's what Donald Trump did. And the video is either outrageous or hilarious, or it's a meh, but it's pretty fun to watch. And the guys that were taking the video didn't say one cross thing about it. Maybe they're fans of the president. Maybe they were just neutral about the whole scene. But it's sort of to me like if you have a milk jug and nobody else is in the room and you get to swig from the jug because it's your milk jug and you get to do whatever you want. It's the same way with the golf course and the golf cart. If that's your green and you want to drive your golf cart across your green, you get to. And they caught it on video. And it's one of the most watched videos of the week. It's pretty funny to me. I don't know. Just kind of cracked me up. It's 11:28. Okay, so our Vibe Score segment is a whole bunch of things. Music, news, videos. Griff's going to plow through some of the things that are going on this week, and we'll rate them. We also need you to do us the favor, Griffin, of in the next half hour, just give us the top 10, maybe. Actually, I'm looking at the top 15 best movies of the century. New York Times came out with a list. They did all 25. Just give us some of the highlights in the next half hour. If you are looking for some movies to see, and sometimes there's a weak or slow spot in the summer, This is not a bad list, or is it? But I hear sounds in my mind. Thank you, Domitine. Brand new sounds in my mind. This is our Vibe Score segment. We do it Saturdays at this time. On the aisle, be seeing you. At 11:39 on WGN, John Williams here. We start this segment with a piece of music that Griffin always picks out for us. Producer Griff says, okay, this is some song that you ought to know a little bit about, and now we're going to rate it. It's what we do on Vibe Score. We'll feed you stories, news, music, videos, viral videos, and ask you to, on a scale of 1 to 100, rate them. What are we listening to there, Griff?
That was Green Light by Lorde, the first track and first single off of her sophomore album that came out actually a few weeks ago, so we're a little late on this one, but the album's called Melodrama.
It's funny because the first part of that I loved, then it got a little too produced and poppy for me. How can I in 30 seconds love and hate the same song?
At some point I'm going to make you narrow down what you mean by produced.
Yeah,
you
okay.
Know.
Well, I mean instruments.
Too many instruments.
I'm going to give that one. I like that though. In general, I like her. I like her voice. She's a duck. She's an interesting person. I'm going to give that one 89.
Okay, yeah, so that's high.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan.
I give it like a 95. I love this song, and it was not historically my best take, probably. But when her first album came out, I was not the biggest fan, and everybody else loved it.
Yeah.
And I felt kind of on the outs with it. And this one, I'm now Team Lorde. I really like this song. I like the rest of the album. I knew I was wrong at the time. I didn't like that song, Royals, very much. And I knew I was wrong. But
yeah, no kidding.
If it's in your heart, you know, I just didn't love it.
Well, that's your vibe. So, it's, by the way, is it Lorde or Lorde?
Lorde.
You said Team Lorde. I thought, oh, Lorde.
Oh, I didn't mean to say that. I think I just said,
Ah, got it. And what's the name of this song that we're vibing?
Green Light.
All right. Now, this is always a challenge for Domiti because we're sort of stretching his boundaries here a little bit. Domiti, Team Lorde, are you on it?
It is. This is the first time I've not been on the pop music train. I got to give this one a 55. I have to.
55. Wow. Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like many songs I've heard already.
Well, there's a reason to maybe dismiss it then. Fair enough.
Sam?
No, Sam's busy.
Sam's busy. Okay.
Sam's got to get over to the someplace to do the something, so he had to opt out. Which is too bad because I think Sam would have given it a 95.
So in the celebrity category, we'll go to next, Daniel Day-Lewis retiring from acting.
Yeah.
In a shocking statement. And I think the question that I posed on Vibe Score is he the best actor of his generation? We could go all time even with this conversation, but I thought it would be too easy to say no if you go all time.
Really? You put him in that category, huh? He's part of that conversation, that is.
Oh, absolutely. I think so, yeah.
But he's not the most prolific of actors, is he?
No, he's very picky. He took a lot of time off in between movies, years off in between movies.
That's the thing. Like, when he announced his retirement, I thought, oh, you're still working? Because I haven't seen you lately.
You haven't seen him since Lincoln in 2012.
For which he won an Oscar. He won it for My Left Foot, and he won it for There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. And he had been off for about 5 years in between There Will Be Blood.
And did
Lincoln
he make any
too.
Movies in between those three? Because they're the only three movies I know him for. And every time he does a awesome.
Well, My Left Foot was early 90s, so he'd done a lot in between that and There Will Be Blood. But so he's got one movie still on the way. He reteamed with the There Will Be Blood director, Paul Thomas Anderson, to do a movie that's coming out next year called Phantom Thread, I believe.
Huh.
So that's still coming. But then after that, apparently, no more.
Well, I don't even know who else is. Like, it's Meryl Streep for the gals. You know, that's kind of always the slam dunk.
Right, yeah. And that's another way to interpret it. Would you do actresses and actors, or would you do, like, the Oscars? Just do. But, yeah, let's say everybody.
Is he the male equivalent of Meryl Streep? And I don't know that he has the range. Has he ever done anything comedic or lighthearted? Has he done a rom-com, Griff?
I don't know. I don't think anyone's ever accused him of not having range, though.
He's always really ponderous or intense. No, Lincoln was kind of... Well, he was Lincoln.
Yeah, but like he's so explosive and powerful in There Will Be Blood. He's more understated in Lincoln. He can work ranges. I just think he wasn't interested in comedy as much. But there are some hilarious parts of There Will Be Blood.
We were listening to that, watching it today before the show, and we found ourselves chuckling. And I didn't remember myself doing that the first time around, but he really is good in There Will Be Blood.
I think he can do it all. But yeah, if you go generation, you've got him up against, say, Denzel Washington or
Tom Hanks,
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, yeah.
Or, you know, these kinds of names. But I would say,
well, he's right there with them in my
book. It just depends on how you define it. Yeah, he's not as big of a movie star, and sometimes that's what you want out of an actor.
That's my problem, now that you mention it. He's no Brad Pitt now, is he, Griffin?
I guess
he's
not.
He's no Hugh Grant, is he?
He's got
no floppy hairdo
and since
for him.
He did less movies, he's got less hits, but less misses also, you know, or George Clooney.
Oh, okay, so you're asking me to 1 to 100 now,
yeah,
having thought about
it? Yeah.
Rate Daniel Day-Lewis, 52, not good enough.
Wow.
I'm teasing. I'm going to give him, how can you not give him a 90-plus for crying out loud?
No, I thought maybe you'd, but just say, okay, if the question is there anyone better? If you think the answer is yes, then you can go low.
Right.
So
right.
If you are really strongly in favor of somebody else,
well, the
you
names
can give
them a 20. You just mentioned, I don't think he has to take second chair to any of them. You could argue, but no, I'm going to keep him at 90. How about you there, Dome T?
I think 85. Only because while I respect actors who are really selective about their roles, I also feel like it's a way to hedge your bets because he doesn't have that many losses because he doesn't take that many movies on.
Right.
You
right.
Know? Yeah. But then you have somebody like Denzel who does a lot of movies, and most of them are great.
That's true. Know?
He's no Johnny Depp now, is he? Just like, I'll make a movie.
Exactly. But also, if you're waiting 5 years to do a movie every time, if it's bad,
yeah, it's all we got for 5 years.
That's a bigger loss.
Yeah. That's very true.
Well, where are you on this one, Griff?
I'd go 80.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Who's better than him?
The names we've mentioned already, Denzel, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I don't know if they're actually better, but it's all subjective, and I would have a hard time choosing. So
when Philip Seymour Hoffman's on the screen, I think he's fantastic.
He's the best.
He is so good.
He is. He's amazing.
Rest in peace. In Viral, I wanted to go back to that Trump video you were talking about.
Oh, yeah, him driving across the golf cart.
The video
green?
Of him driving on the green in the golf cart. Now, I want to ask people, how offended are they by that action? How upset does that make you watching someone drive on the green with a golf cart?
Okay, someone or Trump on his golf course?
Well, we could do both right here, but I think I'm going to ask the video itself, that particular instance.
What's your visceral reaction to that? And is 100 I'm offended and 0
yes.
I'm not?
Yes.
This is the sound of a man thinking.
And you mentioned that it's his golf course.
And he's 70, and he's the flippin' president.
Does that factor in? Okay,
I think it does entirely.
Okay.
100 is I'm offended, 0 is I'm not. I have now moved down to a 31 on that.
Okay, yeah. I'm probably in the same place, but for different reasons, which is just I do not care about the etiquette of golf. I have no respect for it.
What about you, Domitian?
I want them to make noise in the crowd, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I agree. I'm 50-50 on this one. I'm like, meh. I get, but I like the pomp of it all. I could see that in a rap video, just driving across the green with no regard.
I know.
Trump
really.
Has some rapper tendencies that I kind of admire, I must admit.
He should have just thrown down and said, I'm on a boat or something like that. You know?
You've seen that one. I love it.
Well, it's funny, too, that Malcolm Gladwell podcast was just about how much he hates golf, too. So there's two ways that you could take this question. Either you love golf and it offends you to see.
Right.
The rules disrespected or the etiquette disrespected
or the green disrespected. I mean, that does damage the green.
Doing donuts. In the...
Well, it's a golf cart and he's north of 200. I mean, there's a lot of weight there and I'm sure the golf cart displaces it. But I'll bet if you had to putt across that line after him, you would not get a true lie. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So what else you got for us, Griff?
You were talking about this before the show. In the What's Up category, I posted the story about the New Mexico treasure hunt.
Oh, yeah. I love this story. I love this story.
Can you walk us through it?
A quirky multimillionaire has hidden in the mountains of New Mexico literally a treasure chest with gold coins and gold. And he's sort of made it a treasure hunt. See if you can find it. It's been there for half a dozen years now. People are dying in crevasses and rivers trying to find it.
There have been two deaths, I believe.
And people are critical of them. They're saying, these are on your hands. You're playing this game and everybody's trying to find it. You have to pull the gold. I don't think he has to pull the gold at all. If I want to go hunt for the treasure and I lose my life, that's... To me, it's the same as if I want to climb a mountain, and that's my entertainment. And if I die, that's my prerogative. You know, it's too bad, but I don't think you should keep me from doing what I want to do.
Yeah, but say someone had built that mountain and said, go climb it. You would, you know, you can't really, then you would, the blame does go somewhere. I asked the question on VibeScore, is he at fault?
Okay, and 100 is he's at fault?
Yeah.
He has zero. He has zero fault on
he's
this.
He's not zero.
I
don't know
you,
what
Domiti?
The number is, but he's not zero.
Domiti, it's 100% his fault because he told people to go find the gold and now they're dying looking for it. Or it's zero because they went looking for the gold. It's on them.
It's on them.
Thank you. Thank you.
If he doesn't hide that gold, no one dies.
So fair enough.
So by that logic.
It's a great logic. This is like a philosophy class right here.
Not. There's got to be a number there. maybe it's not 100, but it's not zero.
Are you north of 50 on this one, Griff?
Yeah, I'm like 51.
He is slightly more responsible than the people who kill themselves looking
That's not
for
the
it.
Question. Is he at fault?
Okay. Fine. By the way, we also posted on VibeScore, how do you feel about the Bulls-Timberwolves trade? From the Bulls' perspective, 100 is it's a fantastic upgrade for the team. Zero is this is a disaster for the Chicago Bulls. Domiti, do you follow the NBA or the Bulls closely enough to have an informed opinion about this?
I was just going to say I don't follow it closely enough.
No. Okay. Well,
I don't. I have no context here. I'm useless.
My first thought was that it's a trade where both teams benefit because I actually think both teams are better as a result. The Timberwolves are better immediately. The Bulls maybe. I'm going to go 75.
Did I change your mind yesterday a little bit?
Yeah, you were pretty good on that, Mr. Paniano. Okay, thanks for chiming in, Sam. The Bulls-Timberwolves trade, from the Bulls' perspective, 100, it's the best thing that could happen to the Bulls. What do you give it? Sam Pania.
75.
75! All right, let's all go with 75. When asked, yeah, 1 to 100, I'd give it a 75.
Time to move on.
As we move out of the Vibe Score segment, it's 11:50. Griff, you got to click off a couple of movies for us from that New York Times list. Give us the highlights and the lowlights next.
You've come here and you've brought good and wealth, but you have also brought your bad habits as a backslider. You've lusted after women and you have abandoned your child. Your child that you raised, you have abandoned all because he was sick and you have sinned. So say it now. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
Louder, Daniel. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want the blood.
I want the blood.
You have abandoned your child.
I've abandoned my child.
I will never backslide.
I will never backslide.
I was lost, but now I am found.
I was lost, but now I'm found.
I have abandoned my child. Say it. Say it.
I abandoned my child.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Beg for the blood.
Daniel Day-Lewis, and he's joined in that scene by, I forget the name now, Griff. You could probably have it off the top of
Paul
your head.
Paul Dano.
Paul Dano from There Will Be Blood. The New York Times this week put out their list of the 25 best films of the 21st century so far. And let's just start at the top because we don't have that much time here. There Will Be Blood is number one on their list.
Yeah, and Daniel Day-Lewis saw that and he was like, I'm done. Did it. I'm out.
Top that, mic drop. And I think that's fair enough, right? The problem I always have with lists, and you know this, Griff, is I think sometimes they get a little show-offy because half the things on the list are either controversial or you never heard of.
Yes, and I know we've talked about this before, but it was so funny because you... Last week on this show, you were saying that the Father's Day list that the Chicago Tribune released was snotty because it had... But that's this list that had Finding Nemo, Father of the Bride, and The Godfather.
Right.
And it was funny to then see... So that's your bar for snobby lists, which seems pretty low to me. But then the New York Times came out with this top 25 that was really... had some pretty obscure choices. I haven't seen... probably haven't seen half of these movies.
For the record, I don't need you to keep score with my inconsistencies and consistencies. Just let it flow. No,
it's not. I don't think you're inconsistent on that. You're always feeling that way.
But, well, then thank you for that.
No, yeah, you're consistent.
So number one, There Will Be Blood. Number two, best movie of the century so far, Spirited Away, a Japanese anime film, right?
Yeah, Hayao Miyazaki.
Like everybody knows that.
He's a legend. He's a legend. I think that one's fine.
So people know Spirited Away. Go see that. Number three, Clint Eastwood, Million Dollar Baby. Fine. Okay. We're happy for him. Number four, A Touch of Sin. You've heard of this movie?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. Okay. This one really shamed me, this list, I have to say.
Number five, The Death of Mr. Lazarescu.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
You've seen or heard about this movie?
I've heard about it a lot. Haven't seen it.
Here's the byline. I mean, just they have as a sort of teaser to the paragraph that goes with this movie. Have you seen the three-hour Romanian movie? Oh, you got to see it. It's a three-hour Romanian movie.
And worth watching, according
evidently,
to that.
Yes.
I think we should go through and watch all these movies.
Well, maybe we should. I
think it would be a learning experience.
I should not dismiss them out of hand, though I am. Number six is Yi Yi.
Yep.
Don't know that movie. Number seven is Inside Out.
Yeah.
How interesting is that? Number eight is Boyhood. Mm-hmm. Number nine on their list is Summer Hours. And number 10 is The Hurt Locker. Top 10 movies.
So you got some Hollywood picks and then some foreign stuff, too. I like the mix.
For the record, too, number 19 on their list is Mad Max Fury Road. Number 20 is Moonlight. And also on the list is 40-Year-Old Virgin, top 25 films
of the century.
New York Times, best 25 films of the century so far, 1157 WGN.